move to the fifth case this morning, U.S. versus Turner.
May it please the court, counsel, Avanti Vakani on behalf of appellant Matthew Turner. We are here today pursuant to the denial of Mr. Turner's fundamental right to counsel of his own choosing. Mr. Turner was denied his Sixth Amendment right to counsel when the district court summarily disqualified his counsel of choosing, Mr. Ruckert, pursuant to a colloquy with Mr. Ruckert only, which occupied less of the court's time than the 10 minutes given to Mr. Turner to present his case today. The district court here committed a legal error of finding without adequate inquiry that the government met its heavy burden of proving that disqualification was in fact necessary. Here, the government brought a notice of potential conflict of interest. In that notice, it stated exactly one basis for why disqualification of Mr. Ruckert was necessary. It stated in the notice that it may call Mr. Ruckert and may introduce his business records in conjunction with other evidence of Mr. Turner's unexplained wealth. In this notice, it also stated that it will introduce evidence of the purchase, financing, and titling of two luxury cars. Similarly, at the hearing on the notice of potential conflict of interest, there were three references to Mr. Ruckert's proposed testimony. All three of these references, two by the prosecutor and one by the court, identified other sources of this alleged unexplained wealth of Mr. Turner. In fact, it seems that the government concedes that this is the case as it has abandoned any argument that Mr. Ruckert was in fact a necessary witness at Mr. Turner's trial, and this is further supported by the fact that Mr. Ruckert was not called at Mr. Turner's trial.
What's the district judge supposed to do when the defense counsel agrees, yeah, I think I have to get out?
Here, Mr. Ruckert stated that if he would be called as a witness in the trial, then he could not serve as both counsel and a witness. Therefore, Mr. Ruckert did not agree that there was a conflict. So here, the district court had needed to conduct an independent inquiry as to whether there was, in fact, a conflict, and then it needed to speak to Mr. Turner and have a colloquy there as to his Sixth Amendment rights.
Well, he did make some concession about the fact that I think he was asked about some cases, wasn't he?
Correct, and the government relies on this waiver argument as its main argument now. This argument cannot stand for at least three reasons. First, the government fails to cite a single case which holds that a defendant's attorney can waive the defendant's Sixth Amendment right to counsel of his choice. This is a right that's personal to Mr. Turner. Second, the government stated one basis in its notice, that Mr. Ruckert was a necessary witness at Mr. Turner's trial. However, now it relies on this alleged conflict that Mr. Ruckert is somehow the subject of an investigation. However, the court nor Mr. Ruckert did not address that at the hearing on the notice of potential conflict of interest. Therefore, Mr. Ruckert could not have waived that issue. And last, and most importantly, this court in United States versus Turner, decided in February of last year, in 2010, stated that the court is required to advise each criminal defendant of his right to effective assistance of counsel.
But that was in the context of a conflict that existed on the basis of joint representation, and the federal rules of criminal procedure require that duty of inquiry. That's not what we've got here.
The situation there can be likened to the situation here. There it was joint representation where both defendants sought to be represented by the same attorney. The government there contended that the attorney had to be disqualified because at some point in the future it may seek the cooperation of one of those defendants against the other. At that time, it had not sought any cooperation, and the district court there disqualified counsel, stating that an absolute conflict of interest existed. We would liken that to the situation here because at the time this notice was brought and the hearing took place between the court and Mr. Ruckert only, there was no real conflict of interest.
Right, but there's no corresponding rule of federal criminal procedure that requires the sort of inquiry that you're suggesting, as there was in the Turner case.
That's true. The court did not rely only on the rule of the federal rule of criminal procedure there. It also held that entering this disqualification order without making any personal inquiry of the defendant inhibited the district court's ability to assess the risk that a conflict would actually arise and to evaluate whether other protective measures short of disqualification were available. It stated that the district court could have asked the attorney, this court stated that the district court could have asked the attorney to confer with his defendant to ensure that he understood the ramifications of this potential conflict of interest. We have a very similar situation here where the district court could not fully make a decision without really asking Mr. Ruckert anything about this conflict of interest. It did not ask Mr. Ruckert anything about being the subject of an investigation.
I've got to ask, what happened to the $25,000 that were paid to Mr. Ruckert? Any refunds?
Mr. Turner is currently seeking a refund in the Circuit Court of Cook County. Regarding the issue of whether Mr. Ruckert could have waived Mr. Turner's Sixth Amendment right to counsel, this court has also held and stated in United States versus Turner that the disqualification order being entered was premised on a mistake of law, and this was a structural error. Therefore, the defendant was entitled to a new trial. This court, again, in United States versus Harvin in 2001, stated that whether an error is structural depends on whether a substantial right was implicated. The court ruled that a constitutional right is substantial and requires automatic reversal. In fact, Judge Kaney, in the United States versus Warner case, stated that a structural error that was in the context of jurors giving false responses on jury questionnaires. And Judge Kaney stated in his dissent that structural error should not be subject to the plain error analysis. We would submit that in this situation as well, that standard should be applied and the plain error analysis should not apply. Your Honors, I'll finish with one point and reserve my remaining time for rebuttal, that under any standard of review here, this is a structural error, and the violation of Mr. Turner's right to his Sixth Amendment counsel of his choosing entitles him to a new trial under any standard of review. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel.
Let me begin by trying to unbungle something that I think is bungled in our brief, and that is this whole waiver argument. This court decided a case called United States versus Gerhardt in 2009. The government in that case argued that the defendant waived his right to retain counsel because, in that case, counsel moved to withdraw. The court decided the case on a clear error standard, and I would urge that you decide this case on a clear error standard, frankly, because that's sort of the shortest route to an appropriate and just resolution, and you don't need to really address the waiver argument. The point of the waiver argument is, I hope it responds to Judge Hamilton's question, which is, well, what's the district judge supposed to do when a defense counsel says, I have a conflict and I need to get out of this case? What's the responsibility for the district court? And our point in the waiver argument is that there's a naked record here. There was nothing said other than defense counsel said, I have no argument to make. I think that that's a situation in which this court, in Gerhardt, found that there was no clear error. And in this case, there's no clear error. It certainly shouldn't apply the abuse of discretion standard because there was no discretion. There was no information presented to the district court judge here to exercise discretion.
Defense counsel did say if they're planning to call me as a witness, which of course they didn't, right? He was not called as a witness, was he?
Oh, no, he definitely was not called as a witness, but I hope that our brief explains that looking at this case from the 2020 hindsight is a little bit unfair. This is through a glass darkly before the trial has even begun.
Well, I understand that, but that's he, Mr. Rucker, said in several places that he always makes a caveat if they're going to call me as a witness.
And the government indicated it was going to call him as a witness. So there was no dispute about the conflict before the district court. I mean, it's easy to say now, well, why was there any big conflict? We look at the record and we all say, well, they never called him as a witness. He wasn't an important witness. Plus, they got these two other guys who pled guilty and testified against. So they established an overwhelming case against the defendant without proving up the additional $25,000 in income. But I think that the only point in time at which this court should review the district court is that moment in time when the parties came before the district court and said, there's a conflict, and the defense counsel says, I have no argument as to why I should not be disqualified.
So you're asking us to interpret that as the practical equivalent of a withdrawal motion? As I understand the argument, that even though this came into court as the government's motion for disqualification or suggestion of disqualification, right?
That's right.
But once the defense counsel acknowledged the conflict, you know, assuming the facts on the ground to be what they were at the time that the motion was ruled on, it's the same thing as a withdrawal motion?
Well, it's not the same thing as a withdrawal motion, but it's
practical equivalent.
Yeah, it's a practical equivalent when defense counsel says, I have no argument. I have no argument for the court. In other words, they defer to the court to say, yes, you must disqualify me. I have no reason to argue that I shouldn't be disqualified.
And there's no duty of inquiry personal to the defendant under those circumstances?
I think not. I think that would be a bad rule of law for this court to consider, because this is really a legal issue. For the defendant to say, well, I'd like to keep my lawyer, doesn't do anything. I think that you look at the opening brief and the reply brief of the defendant in this case, and there's some suggestion that the defendant has a right to have conflicted counsel. Well, that's been resolved long, long ago in Wheat. So I think
I think it flows from the premise that the conflict is waivable, not necessarily that the defendant has the right to conflict-free counsel. Is there a material distinction between those two things?
No. If it's not clear, I'm backing off of that waiver argument. I think the point of the waiver argument was to point out that the court had no information on which to resolve this matter. There was no argument made. I think it would probably be a mistake for this court to decide this case based on waiver, though we do admittedly, conceitedly make a big issue of it in our open.
No, I understand it. I'm making a different sort of a waiver argument, which is part of what I understand the defendant's argument to be on appeal. Not whether
I understand. Okay.
Not
I'm with
whether
you.
The attorney's statement about, yeah, I've got to get out,
okay,
is a waiver of the right to conflict of the defendant's or to counsel the defendant's choice, but whether there's a positive duty on the part of the court to inquire of the defendant personally as to whether he has a basis and wishes to assert a waiver of the alleged conflict and keep going with this counsel. Not that the court is under a duty to accept
that
waiver.
I understand.
Okay.
Yeah. Is there a responsibility? I think not. I think that would be, that obviously would be a prudent course for the district court, because we'd have a nicer, neater record here. But I think when there's a purely legal issue and the defense counsel is consulted and invited to make a legal argument on why defense counsel should not be disqualified, then to say to the defendant, well, do you want to waive this conflict, which I believe in the context of the case, at the moment in time when this arose, this is not a conflict the defendant or the court would have allowed the defendant to waive.
And then, so I don't know. I haven't analyzed the professional rules.
Mr. Hartzler, have any other courts imposed such a duty of personal inquiry under similar circumstances?
Well, I certainly don't know if any other courts have done that. I'm not aware of any courts, and I don't believe that
I'll
that's...
I'll direct that question to defense counsel as well. So, thank you. Mm-hmm.
I also want to point out that there are a number of pitfalls with retaining this lawyer, even if for some reason he was not going to be a witness. And that is, as we all now know, he's retained this $25,000. It appears to be drug proceeds. And so that lawyer's representation could easily have been affected in the way he addresses questions to various people, including the defendant who testified, to avoid the revelation to the jury, to the court, to the public, that the $25,000 in his retention fee came from this defendant and was apparently the proceeds of drug dealing. It would have affected his representation of this defendant arguably adversely, and so had the court allowed him to stay in the case, he'd not been called as a witness, we'd have a very different issue here.
I think is that in part what accounts for the brevity of the record? The fact that this payment was likely drug
I think that's probably. I think that's probably.
Nobody wanted to go too far in the inquiry.
I think that's probably right, yeah. Yeah. I'm saddened to hear that he's retained the $25,000, but those things happen in the real world. And I suspect that is one of the reasons that he was ready to bail out of this case as soon as the government brought it to the attention of the district court. All right. If there are no further questions, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Harrison. We'll see you again soon.
I didn't hear that.
I said we'll see you again soon.
Thank you.
I'll address just a few points. First, there are two potential bases for a conflict here. The government seems to go back and forth between the two. First, in its notice, it stated that Mr. Ruckert was a necessary witness. And second, it's relying on Mr. Ruckert as the subject of an investigation. These are two separate conflicts. And what's important here is what was addressed at the hearing. What did the district court address? The district court asked Mr. Ruckert simply, do you have any legal argument on this basis that you are going to be a necessary witness in the trial? Mr. Ruckert stated that he did not. To address some of the other points, the government states here that the court had no information on which to decide this conflict. That's precisely our point. The district court did not inquire into this potential conflict, and it simply there was one statement made as to this subject of an investigation. The government stated at the hearing, I should just note, well, there is an additional issue with respect to whether that money was properly reported. I do not want to get into any more detail than that. That was the end-all be-all of this argument made by the government that there's this potential conflict, and the district court simply could not have done its job by relying on that to state that there was a conflict of interest here such that Mr. Ruckert needed to be disqualified. To address your other question earlier and something the government just spoke to, situations such as waiving a jury trial or pleading guilty. Judge Hamilton, earlier today you addressed the fact that there needs to be a face-to-face record when one agrees to a plea agreement. The same standard must apply here. This is waiving one's right to counsel, and Mr. Turner was not even informed of what was going on in front of him. Therefore, there is more that we can rely on aside from the joint representation context.
Can you answer my question to Mr. Hartzler as well? Have any other courts imposed a duty of personal inquiry to the defendant under these circumstances?
I don't have a case that I can cite but I would state that every case which has addressed this will make sure that there's a record there, that if the defendant waives his right to conflict-free counsel, there will be a face-to-face inquiry made.
If the other way.
Right.
That's the other way.
Right.
Like we take not guilty pleas without hearing from a defendant, but
right.
We need to hear from the defendant to take a guilty plea. So.
Right. Yeah. I see I've run out of time.
Thank you,
no
counsel.
Thank you.
The case will be taken under advisement.